Thank you, Kristen, and thank you all. It's unusual to get a round of applause before I even do much, so I appreciate it. You know, when I was thinking about what I wanted to share with you all this morning, I asked someone, maybe by the name of Kristen Shipler, possibly, if there are any topics or themes that you all are thinking about in your community. And she told me that this month there's been a theme at Germantown about mindfulness. And I was very excited to hear that because I have many stories to tell about mindfulness in my own life. Mindfulness practice has now been a part of my life for the past 3 or 4 years. Has anyone here engaged in any kind of mindfulness practice? All right, so some of you have some experience with this. So I want to talk to you a little bit about mindfulness, but I don't just want to talk about the formal practice. And so actually the way I'm going to get into talking about some of these things that can show up in our daily lives as mindful activities is to talk about a movie that might surprise you. There is a movie that came out in 2007, one of my favorite films, kind of a sleeper hit at the time, Waitress, starring Carrie Russell and Nathan Fillion. I see a couple nods of recognition. It didn't get much acclaim at the time that it came out, but it was one of those sleeper hits that people started watching on Netflix or on rentals, and they recently made it into a Broadway musical. So Waitress, you might be wondering, what on earth could that movie, that rom-com from 2007, have to do with mindfulness and mindfulness practice? Well, the main character in this film is a woman named Jenna. She's maybe my age, early 30s, maybe late 20s. She is a struggling waitress in a very small diner. You don't know where it is in the movie, but it's sort of in kind of any town, USA, a sleepy small town where everybody knows everybody. And she is a waitress at this diner, but she is even more importantly a very gifted baker. Jenna's role at this restaurant is not only to be a waitress, but she actually creates the special at this diner every morning, the special pie. And we learn in the very first scene of this movie that the pies Jenna creates are not just delicious, they're reflections of her own world and what's going on in her life. Each of these daily special pies is sort of a mini autobiography that tells the story of the circumstances, the joys, and the complex emotions in her life. And we become aware quickly that the circumstances of her life have had layer upon layer of difficulty in them for some time. We get that sense when we hear about the first pie we see in the movie. She puts it on the menu, she calls it Bad Baby Pie. It's a quiche of egg and brie with a smoked ham center. It's the pie that Jenna invents on the morning she discovers that she is pregnant with the child of her abusive husband, Earl. Earl, who is a deeply insecure and therefore deeply violent and angry and threatening man, who controls Jenna's access to money, who controls her ability to move around her small town. She is not happy to learn that she is pregnant. We see some of what Jenna's been going through by the other pies that she introduces us to in those early scenes. We have I Hate My Husband Pie. You take bittersweet chocolate and you don't sweeten it. You make it into a pudding and you drown it in caramel. Later on in the movie, we see Earl murders me because I'm having an affair pie. You smash blackberries and raspberries into a chocolate crust. That's it. You know, part of why I love this film is because for a movie that seems on its surface and from the movie posters and the ad campaigns to ostensibly be about a small town waitress who can bake a mean pie, it deals with the serious and the deep complexities of our lives. Jenna is dealing with birth and new life and possibility, and also with betrayal and violence and fear. She's dealing with all of the complex experiences that arise around this tension in our lives, this possibility of feeling trapped, but also feeling a call towards change or towards freedom. Now, the pies are obviously a storytelling device for the audience. They're a window into her internal life, and they give us a way to understand her feelings and her experiences. But what are those pies for her? That was what got me thinking about this movie. For Jenna, what do these pie recipes do? They name what's going on in her life. They provide a way for her to call her attention back to what is here for her and to check in. For Jenna, pie baking in this way is a spiritual practice. Now, spiritual practice can sometimes sound like a very kind of out there concept to us. I know that it did for me. I grew up in a non-religious household. I discovered Unitarian Universalism in my early 20s, and I was attracted to the intellectual freedom that UUism provided and those conversations about big questions that I loved having with other UUs. But spiritual practice felt a little woo, right? Felt a little bit like the only things I knew that were spiritual practices might be things like prayer or other things that I didn't feel drawn to because of my own background and my own beliefs. I've learned over time that at its core, any spiritual practice is really a practice of noticing and opening to what's here. It's any practice that gives us the ability to sink in to the present moment. It might look like prayer for you. It might look like journaling or creating art. It might be cooking or mindfully eating. Sometimes when I talk to members of my congregation about starting a spiritual practice, they say, well, I walk my dog every week, and that is time for me to relax and calm down. And I say, that might be a spiritual practice. But let me ask you, are you keeping the list of the groceries you need while you walk your dog? Are you planning out the conversation you're going to have with your sister later on about that fight you had yesterday? Or in those times, on those walks, are you noticing what's around you? Are you taking in the sights and the sounds and the smells of nature? Are you aware of what's happening inside your own body? Do you see the thoughts and the stories that you tell yourself? If those things are happening, then almost anything you do can be a spiritual practice. And I think the truth is we were all made differently, and we were probably all made to have our own piece of spiritual practice that is right for each of us to plug into. So it may look like sitting in mindfulness meditation for 20 minutes silently a day, or it may look like pie baking, or it might look like something else. But these spiritual practices, they allow our thoughts and our emotions to move from the unconscious to the conscious mind. Any practice like this that is mindful helps us notice the stories that we tell ourselves about our lives, how the events of our lives trigger emotions and thoughts and reactions. And they are ways of checking in with where we are. For Jenna, baking pies is a way of checking in with where she is amidst a story and a life that is constantly trying to pull her away. She is constantly devising schemes and distractions and plans for escape from her life. And who could blame her? Her life is difficult. I think we all have some experience with what it's like to feel distractions and schemes and plans for escape bubbling up in our minds. If you've ever been stuck in traffic, you know that that mind starts to go, we don't want to be here, and so we start to figure out a way to get out. Sometimes it's when we're in line at the grocery store. All these unconscious thoughts about the people in line in front of us, that if we were aware of them, we might not like ourselves for having. I know that for me, there was a time in the last few years when I found myself scheming and plotting and planning to escape a circumstance in my life very often. I worked in a cubicle, and I had a part-time job, 4 days a week, so not very part-time. while I was serving as ministerial intern at the Wellsprings congregation half-time. For 2 years, I was very overworked, something I bet a lot of you can relate to at some point in your life, whether it was at a job for pay or whether it was at home with kids. Sometimes there are seasons in our life where it feels like all we do is set the alarm for 6:30 in the morning, get up and follow from the next thing to the next thing to the next thing to the next thing, crash into our beds at 11:30 or midnight, set that alarm and wake up and do it all over again. So a couple years into, well, a year and a half, I would say, into my internship on the one hand and this part-time job on the other, I found myself sitting at my cubicle one morning and looking at that long list of things on my agenda for the day, a list that went until 5 o'clock and then went after that with more church responsibilities. And it was not the kind of day when I had things I was looking forward to. It was a lot of have-to kind of stuff. And as I sat there frustrated and sad and exhausted, I had this thought. I just want this day to be over. I'd had that thought many times in my life. I just want this day to be over. But for some reason, because I'd begun to practice mindfulness and sitting and noticing my own stories and my own thoughts, I was able to see that thought. To step outside of it, to be conscious of it, not just to have it, but to see that I just want this day to be over can so quickly become I just want this week to be over, or I just want this month to be over, or I just want this year to be over. And then what am I doing with my life? When I began a personal practice of mindfulness meditation, of sitting for 20 minutes a day and just learning to see my own thoughts, I started reading a book by the Buddhist monk and teacher Thich Nhat Hanh called The Art of Mindfulness. And he tells a story in that book about something he didn't like to do. Yes, Buddhist monks, they get feisty too sometimes. And he hated when it was his turn to do the dishes after the evening meal at the monastery. And he began to realize that every time it was his turn to do the dishes, he started being grumpy before the meal even began. And then he sulked his way back into the kitchen while all the other monks were enjoying their cup of tea and having conversation with each other after dinner, and he was scrubbing away at those dishes, and all he could think of, he said, was how much he wanted to be out there. And all he could do was wait until that moment when he might finally get to sit down and join them for that cup of tea. But he says over time he started to realize that he needed to do the dishes to do the dishes. Because if he spent all his time with those dishes just thinking about the cup of tea that he wanted to enjoy when he was done, then he wasn't really alive in the moment that he was doing the dishes. These things might seem inconsequential, but they set up our habits for how we deal with anything unpleasant in our lives. If all we do is dream and scheme and plan for escape, we might really miss something. We might miss an opportunity to grow or some help that is coming our way. On that day that I sat in my office and thought differently and saw differently that sentence, I just want this day to be over, and I thought about Thich Nhat Hanh with those dishes, something actually shifted inside of me. And I began to realize that this is the day that I have in front of me. And I don't want to miss this day. Why would I want to do that? It doesn't make it perfect. It may not make it pleasurable, but why would I want to miss this day? When I began a mindfulness practice, I had all kinds of ideas about what spiritual practice was. I thought it meant we had to be holy and sit on a pillow somewhere by a stream in expensive yoga pants, right? I had this image of the women on the cover of Mindful magazine in the Whole Foods aisle, right? They were thinner than I was, and they looked a lot more calm. They had access to retreat centers that I had never been able to pay for. I thought that spiritual practice was all about being holy and pure and perfect and achieving some state of peace. And so when I started practicing mindfulness, I thought for a while that I was doing it all wrong because all these thoughts and emotions and stories kept showing up in my head. But I learned. I got over my idea of mindfulness as unattainable peace and perfection. We are none of us perfect and peaceful all the time. And in fact, mindfulness practice and spiritual practice is actually about the exact opposite of that. Mindfulness is about coming clean with ourselves. It's about practicing being ourselves with integrity and honesty, all the good and all the bad. Because the beautiful thing about spiritual practice is it's personal. No one is looking, right? It's practice, it's not performance. No one knows what comes up inside my head. No one else is there to judge it, only me. In those moments when I practice, I'm free of the encumbrances and the expectations and the disapproval and the violence sometimes of this world. I'm free of all that, except for what I create in my own head. We are so used to shaping our lives around all of those encumbrances and threats that come from our world because we have to. But when we sit with ourselves, we can practice how we'll respond in those real moments. We can see the unfinished business and the unacknowledged emotion, the grief and the shame and the secrets and the anger, and we can let them be. And maybe while letting them be, we're able to cultivate the courage that we need to actually stare life straight in the face when the moment of truth comes that we need to deal with something out there in the real world. The key to mindfulness for me is in not running or distracting or distancing myself from the difficult things, but looking at them right in the face. Because looking at them right in the face might be what saves me and what saves us at the end of the day. In the movie, Jenna does a lot of things to try to get out of where she is. Again, I can't blame her for trying a lot of different strategies to get out of a bad and unfair and frightening situation. She lies to her husband. She tries to hide money from him and tells some stories about what it was for when he inevitably finds it. Her lies do not save her. They don't work. Then she comes up with a new plan. It's an interesting one. She decides she's going to start to have an affair with her married obstetrician. Interesting choice, Jenna. And actually, that one seems to be going well. Over the course of her 9 months of pregnancy, they fall in love, and her obstetrician says he's going to leave his wife, and he's going to rescue her and save her, and they even get to the place where he says, "Meet me tomorrow morning at the office. I will pick you up in my car from the front steps, pack a bag, and we will get out of here, finally." Jenna goes to the office that morning, and she sits down on that front step outside the door, and her water breaks. A very real and painful call back to what was really there, back to what was real in her life. For Jenna to ever be free of the difficult circumstances that she found herself in, she had to come clean. She had to be honest with herself about where she is and what she's afraid of and what she's called to do. And the most beautiful thing about this movie, I think, is that once she begins to come clean with herself and with the people around her, she finds that she has help. Her friends, her co-workers at the diner, old Joe, the crotchety regular who always wants to sit in her section, they are the ones who stick with her. They are spiritual practice partners for her. They constantly force her, ask her to take a look at what is happening. Her co-workers at the restaurant are the ones who convince her that she needs to take that pregnancy test. They give her the baby book to remind her that this baby is real and is coming. Old Joe, that crotchety regular, reads her her horoscope one day, which just happens to say, if you're having an affair, maybe it's time to step back, take a look at your life, and reassess. I'm sure that's what was printed in the paper. He's not shaming her. He's not calling her a bad person. In fact, he's actually doing the opposite. Out of love, he's asking her to take a look at what she's doing and to realize that she can do better and that she might need some support and some help from all these people around her who love her. Towards the end of the movie, when Jenna is finally talking with one of her coworkers about the affair, her coworker says, look, Jenna, I don't like what you're doing, but I love you. I love you no matter what you do. What grace it is to hear those words. I love you no matter what you do. Coming clean is not about being pure. It's just about being honest. And when Jenna begins to come clean, she realizes that it's only through being honest about where we are that we can come to know the true power of grace and love in our lives. Because Jenna found her way to be mindful, to notice what was really happening in her life, and to learn to stay with those circumstances instead of seeking a mental escape, she does find the courage that she needs to make a change. And because she shares that with others, she finds the help that she needs to make a change. So I hope that we might realize that mindfulness is not just about achieving some inner peace. It's not private and only for ourselves. It is actually spiritual heavy lifting. It builds up our muscles to be able to engage with the difficult situations that are always around us in this world. I hope that we might all find in those situations when we can get honest, when we can name and notice and speak what's going on, that our help will show up in some form. Maybe not in the way we expected, maybe just in the form of our own inner courage and fortitude, maybe just in the form of gratitude that arises for a day that is what it is. But I hope that if we can honestly notice this world within us and around us, that we might all recognize and awaken to the vital importance and the value of each of these small moments that make up our lives, to the value of all of this time that we have to be here with each other. Amen.